Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Good morning. It's Blois Olson here on News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome to the Sunday Take. We are a week closer to the municipal elections throughout Minnesota, but all eyes remain on Minneapolis, locally, regionally, and nationally. We'll discuss two of the big charter amendments in Minneapolis. First, we'll discuss public safety with Yes for Minneapolis's Janae Bates. Second, we'll talk to longtime Minneapolis leader Peter Hutchinson. He's helping campaign for the first charter amendment for realigning the city council and the mayor into a co-equal government. Last weekend, the Minnesota Republican Party elected a new leader. Former Senator David Hahn is their next chairman. We'll have his first in-depth interview. So grab some coffee or have another donut. Minnesota's leading weekly political radio show is next. If it's Sunday and you like Minnesota politics, then you'll love the Sunday Take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm Blois Olson, your host on News Talk 830 WCCO. Joining me now is Janae Bates. She is with Yes for Minneapolis in favor of the charter amendment changing the police department to a department of public safety. Janae, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
So obviously this is a local issue on the ballot. It's being voted on by the people of Minneapolis, but there's a certain statewide and even a national view of this. As you have, you know, been working on this issue, I know, for months. Where do you think kind of the discussion and the debate stands today? Do you think voters kind of have wrapped their head around the issue and or, you know, after the court cases, et cetera, you know, exactly what the language is?
Yeah, you know, the reality is that this ballot initiative came out of community, that, you know, Yes for Minneapolis had been talking to the people and with the people and are the people of Minneapolis since when we launched in January of this year. And they knew that they really needed to create a system of safety in the city. And you're right, there was also and has been the national conversation about trying to do that. We saw in recent weeks that that they have that on the national side that they have failed to institute any kind of real reforms. We saw this debate most certainly on the statewide level. As you know, I was testifying at the Capitol and have been doing so for the last 5 years to do and make some of these concrete changes that should be happening there. And what I've found is that both on the national level and on the state level, and even quite frankly, on the local level, that everyone wants to pass the buck to the next level. and they say, oh, well, we shouldn't do that. We should leave it to so-and-so. And, you know, the reality is that every single level of government has the ability to make some concrete changes. And at the local level, at the municipal level, most certainly, the city of Minneapolis, you know, they took seriously this proclamation that Black Lives Matter and that they really do want to ensure that everyone in the city has the opportunity and the ability to be safe. And so, you know, it's exciting and a beautiful thing that the people of Minneapolis have made that declaration and that proclamation, and that they are willing to turn that into a policy. And so it is on the ballot in Minneapolis. There is a lot of excitement and momentum around this. You know, recent polls have continued to show the growing momentum and that the people of Minneapolis do favor it in a yes, and that there are still quite a few voters out there who are either on the fence or unsure or unclear about what this does. So there is definitely the need to continue to get that information out there.
Janae, just to be clear, I mean, the people of Minneapolis are not all excited about this. And I think one of the reasons that I've thought of this whole time is because when change happens, people want to envision what looks like on the other side. And this is a really tough issue to envision for the whole city, what it looks like on the other side. And I think the one word in the ballot that says could include peace officers. And I think that's one of the hangups for a lot of people trying to envision what this would look like on the other side if it passes. How do you talk to skeptics? How do you talk to people that just don't trust the city council to enact this in a way that includes police officers?
Yeah, well, I do just want to go back to the fact that the reality is it is true that the people of Minneapolis are excited about the ability and possibility to be safe. Now, coming to the ballot question and right, this question around if police will be a part of this department, if police would be a part of the city, there is no question. The reality is that yes, absolutely, definitively, demonstrably, by state law, by city ordinance, the city will have police officers. There is the fact that it does say in order to, it is about keeping people safe, like that this Department of Public Safety is just that. It is a comprehensive and integrated way to keep people safe. So we're looking at it in a holistic way, which means that the people of Minneapolis get to have police officers. Armed police officers are still necessary for a whole series of reasons. And they're also not the qualified trained professionals that are needed in many, many more reasons, which is what law enforcement has been saying for a long time. They've said that the majority of calls that they get don't really require them. So why not fully staff, fully fund and expand public safety to make it possible to have all of the right people showing up for the right situations?
I think that's a good point. And there's a couple of things that I just kind of want to follow up on that our listeners will kind of be focused on. And I'm with Janae Bates. She's a Yes for Minneapolis on the Public Safety Charter Amendment. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take. Janae, one of the pieces that I have observed, and I really kind of want to understand it, is amongst the people who are supporting Yes for Minneapolis are people who to this day say they want to abolish police in Minneapolis. How do you tell them and how do you tell voters that they aren't going to get their way in the long run? Because I think that's where, again, that's where people, they want a different kind of police department. They want safety for everyone, but they worry that this is, I'll call it a slippery slope, or this is the first step in what many in the far left said is we don't need police. We don't want police. And in fact, 4 years ago, there was a mayoral candidate who said that police shouldn't even carry guns. So I think those are the kinds of things that people go back to, critics go back to. And when I see it and I hear it, even in posters in Minneapolis today, I wonder, are the Yes for Minneapolis people like you willing to tell those folks you've gone too far, or that would be a step too far?
I mean, there's just the reality of the makeup of the city, the needs of the city, and no one within the campaign, regardless of their political ideology of being a reformist or having a long-term vision around abolition, none of them believe that this is a city that could function in its current day without police officers. So that is just a full stop you know, that's a very clear reason why, you know, the charter change in itself does not do that, does not get rid of police. As a matter of fact, the police officers are the number one and really only professional listed in the charter amendment itself. And again, that's intentional because it is about ensuring that the neighborhoods of Minneapolis, the wards, the city, the neighbors, that they actually have a data-driven and community process to ensure that people get to be safe. And so, you know, the idea that police officers are not a part of that is just ridiculous. I mean, the reality is...
understand why people, after the last year and a half...
I understand why there are definitely, you know, opposition likes to really distract people with this idea that the campaign has a nefarious and ungrounded reason to want to have chaos in the city. It makes no sense. Like the reality is even the few, because it is a minority group within the coalition who do have this long term vision of abolition, and that's fine. But even they,
hang on, Jeanette, hold on.
Yeah.
You just said that abolition is fine, and I think that's where people go. If she thinks abolition is fine, I can't trust them on what they're saying about this amendment. And that is the finer point that I am hearing from business owners. I am hearing from independent voters who are really undecided. And that's where there seems to be this unwillingness to say, no, full stop. We would never, ever. And those people are wrong. And that becomes, I think, the flashpoint for not trusting. And ultimately, my last question will be about trust, because I think that's where we're all trying to get to, is trusting public safety in Minneapolis.
Yes. So let's talk first. I didn't say that. Here's what I said. I said that it is fine that we have people in the city, because this is a city made up of folks across race, income, region, ideology. It is fine that folks have differing opinions about what they think Minneapolis should look like 150 years from now. That is fine. Okay. That's fine. We should be open to having that kind of discussion. And we should also be grounded in, what are we doing today? What are we doing in 2021 that takes us a step forward out of the armed police only response that we know has been abusive, that has created mistrust and distrust, and that is an anomaly from the rest of the state of Minnesota? We have to have an honest conversation that the Minneapolis Police Department functions very differently than every other police department in the state, that the city charter is actually an anomaly for Minneapolis. It is the only charter in the entire state of Minnesota that has a guaranteed number of police, armed police officers in their city constitution. That has led to us seeing the on-ramp, the continuous violence, the continuous issues of lying, of what we've seen with the Jahlil Stalling case. Like there are very clear reasons why this charter needs to change. And to, you know, stir up all of this fear about something that is not in the realm of reality or possibility for the foreseeable future is wrong. And it is a disservice to the people of Minneapolis about what they can have tomorrow, right?
Well, and it's good that you say it that way, because I do believe that there has been needed long-term reforms in the Minneapolis Police Department. So I am just saying that when I see posters, when I walk around the city that say abolish, that is the counterweight to, you know, the people who want you to vote no. And that's the discussion that people are having. And frankly, I think it's there. As we wrap here on this segment of Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO, what can we all think about? Win, lose, or I guess there won't be a draw in this case, but win or lose, how do we begin to pivot forward on trust? And I ask that because I think this would be a totally different discussion if we weren't in the middle of, you know, a major spike in violent crime and this kind of loss of officers to deal with the violent crime over the last year. But what can we do to recruit, retain people who want to be, I'll say it, the new age of public safety in Minneapolis?
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question. That is one of the things that's really exciting about this particular campaign, because another group of folks we haven't mentioned yet who are part of the campaign, even though for various reasons, obvious reasons, they can't be loud and proud about it, are police officers. So there are quite a few police officers who we are in relationship with, some who did leave the force during 2020. Because they felt like they were too stretched, that they were being called into situations they weren't prepared for, that there hasn't been any accountability or trust between them and the residents of the city. And then there's also officers who are currently on the force who are excited about the ability to finally have some trust with residents, to not be considered the villains in the story, knowing that the real villains has been, you know, the police federation that has blocked any ability for reform with teeth in the city. And so, you know, regardless of what happens in November, the reality is that this is going to be ongoing work that, you know, absolutely. You know, if the charter does change, we know that the interim department commissioner would come into place in that first 30 days. But we also know, again, that there's going to be that intentional process. We'll have the police department that will not any longer exist within the charter, but it will exist as an entity because of the city ordinance. And so MPD has named, they are having a hard time recruiting people.
Right.
And for good reason. We see the continual headlines about why. We can actually do something as a city to really start to stop the bleeding in every sense of the word.
Janae Bates, my guest here on Sunday Take. Janae, we will continue this discussion in weeks, months, and probably years to come. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to talk about another charter amendment, the one about mayoral power. We'll have Peter Hutchinson talking about whether or not we should have a different kind of mayoral and relationship with the city council. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. Blaise Olson, your host on News Talk 830 WCCO. Joining me now, Peter Hutchinson, longtime civic leader, and someone who has known this Minneapolis as a city for a long time. And he studies government. And one of the other issues on the ballot this year is a charter amendment changing the dynamics of power, frankly, and with the mayor and the city council. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Blaise, glad to be here. Thanks.
So, Peter, talk about this amendment that isn't getting as much attention that would change the governing structure between the mayor and the city council on the Minneapolis charter. Why do you think it's necessary and what should voters know?
Well, first, I think people need to understand that about 100 years ago, the city of Minneapolis launched a unique experiment in governance by muddling the roles of the mayor and the city council. And 100 years later, we get a chance to fix this. Now, if you think about it, the federal government has a strong legislative function and a strong executive function, the Congress and the president. The state of Minnesota has a strong legislative function in our legislature and a strong executive function in our governor. Minneapolis is virtually the only city in the country that doesn't have a similar combination of a strong legislative and a strong executive function. And I think the way to understand this amendment is that it's intended to strengthen both. So it does three or four things. The very first thing it does is it strengthens the legislative function of the city council. It designates them as a legislative organization. It gives them a staff to support their legislative activities. It creates a new city auditor reporting directly to the council to enhance their oversight capabilities.
Okay.
It retains the council's singular role in deciding how to spend money in this city. The budget goes through the city council. There is no budget unless the city council approves it. And it retains the ability of city council members to advocate for their constituents. The second thing it does is it clarifies the executive function of the mayor. It makes the mayor the appointing authority for the department heads. And by the way, Blaise, when I go around town and I've had wonderful opportunities to talk to people all over the city, they all go, really? The mayor doesn't appoint? No. Today, charter literally says that 14 people collectively appoint. Well, you know, if 14 people are your boss, it's pretty hard to know how to take direction. So the second thing this charter amendment does is it clarifies the mayor's role as the chief executive. Makes him or her the appointing authority for department heads. And that means the mayor gets to appoint, but the city council still gets to approve. But in the end, those appointees report to the mayor. And if they fail, the mayor can fire them. These things are not possible in the charter that we have today. So that's the second thing, just clarifying who's the chief executive.
Got it.
Go ahead.
No, I mean, I think that that is, I think that's a good way to think about it is that, you know, people just by way of civics class think the mayor's the chief executive, but currently in Minneapolis, that's not the case.
That is not the case. And we've looked all over. You will not find another city with this structure. This is a 100-year-old experiment, and I think it's time for us to realize it didn't work and we can fix it. And this amendment is the thing that fixes it.
Are there current issues? I mean, obviously, all eyes are in Minneapolis, locally, regionally, nationally. Are there things that we are seeing right now or we've seen in the last few years that you think would feel different or would be different if this amendment passes? Had we had this amendment before the last few years?
Yeah, I think the most obvious thing that citizens would notice would be the effective decision making on a day-to-day basis in City Hall. So what does that mean? Well, if the public works director feels as though we need to fix a water problem on a street, he doesn't need to get approval from 14 people. He needs to get approval from the mayor and get it done. So what we notice would be the speeding up of the ability of the city to get its job done. I think one of the most disheartening things about the last 2 years is I think I got this right, that 9 charter department heads. So these are the heads of the major departments in the city have left the city in the last couple of years, including 3 city coordinators. And that doesn't happen in a place where people are excited to come to work every day and are see opportunity to make the world a better place. That happens in a place where people are discouraged. So the second thing I think people would see is a lot more stability in the administrative structure in the city. And that longevity pays off. You get better service, you get more creativity and innovation when people feel as though they're in a place that rewards that kind of behavior.
Does the amendment kind of lay out what the positions the mayor appoints are, or does that still come through some sort of, you know, internal legislation? I'm thinking of specifically, you know, the city coordinator has long been kind of a very powerful person that nobody knew who they were. And I'm just wondering, like, does that position still exist, or is that up to the council and the mayor to try to figure out?
Yeah, so all those departments are, they're called charter departments because they're actually laid out in the charter.
Okay.
So the city coordinator, the, you know, the chief financial officer, civil rights, police and fire and so on, they're all in the charter. So okay, they will continue to exist. The only thing that would change is who's the boss, who's the appointing authority.
Got it. You know, we've obviously had a lot of kind of flashpoint hot button issues from public safety to the pandemic. Is this issue starting to kind of be on people's radar? Because obviously between the public safety amendment, rent control, city council races, the mayor's race, there's a lot going on in the city. And I wanted to have you on because I don't hear a lot about this amendment. How are you guys getting the word out?
Well, we're doing sort of traditional and non-traditional things. So traditionally, there's mailings going out. You know, I mean, we're being deluged right now with mailings saying vote yes or vote no or whatever. But I think the thing that's the most effective that we're doing is going neighborhood to neighborhood, church group to church group, book clubs, you know, garden groups. We'll talk to anybody to first explain that there is this amendment. And by the way, people are constantly saying, are you kidding? We have to actually do this to get the city organized the way we thought it was already organized.
Right.
People are just sort of dumbfounded that we have to do this. And once they figure that out, which happens in the first 7 minutes,
yeah,
everybody's ready to go. They're just thinking, well, yeah, great, let's get this done. You know, what can I do to help? So we've actually felt pretty good about the reception we've gotten from as people become increasingly aware. My guess is, you know, I mean, you know this as well as I do. October, people are focusing now on what's going on. And my guess is we'll get the kind of attention that we need by the time we get to the finals, if you will, on November 2nd.
Sounds good. Peter Hutchinson's been our guest here on Sunday Take. He's advocating for changing the Minneapolis charter to give us what would be, quote unquote, a strong mayor system, or as he puts it, a clear idea of who's the boss for city department heads. Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, boys. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Welcome back for the final cup of coffee here on Sunday Take. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to News Talk 830 WCCO, and I'm really honored and happy that the next guest has agreed to come on and have a good conversation. He is former Senator David Hahn. He is the new chairman of the Minnesota Republican Party. We've known each other for a number of years, and welcome to the program.
Well, good to see you again, and thanks for having me.
So, I mean, I think you've said it offline. You ran for GOP chairman. Why did you want the job?
Well, a lot of people ask me that question, but really what it comes down to, the party gone through a little bit of a tough time here in the past, whatever, month, two. There was a resignation, unexpected concern about how we move forward. I've had the fortune to be involved in political things and had some background and experience that I thought would be helpful to the party at this time. And for me, being involved in politics has always been about trying to be helpful, to try to make things better. I do believe the party, the Republican Party, is an important institution, if you will. It has an important mission. I've been affiliated with it for quite a while and believe in the principles of the Republican Party. So I thought, well, this might be a good time for me to try to take what I've learned and apply it at a time when the party needs some leadership. So I got into it.
You know, I can't lose track, and you probably haven't either, that you ran in 2017. You were defeated by former chairwoman Carnahan. In those 4 years, were there many moments where you thought, if I was chairperson, this would be different or this might be different? Because those 4 years in the Republican Party between 2017 and now are there's been a lot of change, obviously, nationally, locally. And I just wonder kind of how you reflected over time about where Republicans were and where they were headed.
Well, actually, no, I didn't really. After that election, I got involved for a little bit with a gubernatorial campaign. And then after that kind of ended, I went to work for the Township Association as the executive director. And that's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And their board wanted me to not be involved in politics. So I did not run for any state central positions. I didn't even go to my local BPOUs. I tried to distance myself a little bit from the political world that I'd been involved with for a number of years, and probably was a good thing, frankly, just to kind of take a break from that for a while. So I sort of checked out. I, you know, certainly kept up on what was going on and read what was reported in the media. And I had a lot of friends that were closer to this, and they would tell me things on occasion. But I really didn't spend a whole lot of time focused on that because I kind of moved on to some other things and just was trying to focus on that.
So here we are. The party has obviously gone through a little bit of a tumultuous time in leadership. There's been some financial issues. Where do you come in to a party? Give me your sense of the party operation, what you're going to work on first, and, you know, kind of how you look at what you told the Central Committee and others who elected you on where you would aim to take the party.
Well, there is a pretty bare bones organization at this point for a variety of reasons. After the resignation, and there were some turnover in staff going on even before that, and so the organization right now is pretty bare bones. So we are looking at building back some of the staff capacity to allow us to do the things that we need to do. So certainly we're looking at that. Fundraising, always an issue. We have a financial plan that was adopted by the executive committee of the party earlier in the year. We are still, we haven't changed that plan. It calls for additional funds to be raised for the balance of this year. Also, there is a projection of expenses. Now, those expenses are not going to be nearly what they were projected to be, since a lot of those were associated with staffing costs of one kind or another. So we're going to work through that plan, raise the money, and begin to build back the capacity of the organization to do the things that we need to do to be ready for next year, which is when the big push comes on, to be a participant in the campaigns that we'll see going on as we get closer to the election.
What about as you look ahead to 2022? You know, usually the president's midterm year is not always their strongest. Biden's approval is dipping. Do you feel like there's optimism, even though, you know, Minnesota has been a tough state for Republicans statewide for a while?
Oh, there definitely is optimism. That's one thing I've discovered, even going through the process of campaigning for the party chair position, that even though there were a lot of concerns, there was a lot of enthusiasm among the members of the State Central Committee. Lots of people talking about the opportunities that were ahead in the next election. Since I've been here this past 5 days, I guess this is my fifth day, there are donors who are very optimistic about the chances. So I think you're right. In an off-year election, typically the out party gets a little bit of a enthusiasm boost, and there's some opportunities. And I think that's true, certainly on the national level. But I think as well as here at the state level, there are things that are going to give us as Republicans some opportunities to be successful. So there's a high degree of optimism among party members. And yes, we got a few challenges to overcome, but they're not insurmountable by any means. And we're going to be a player in this election. I think we'll surprise some people.
This is Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. My guest is David Hand. He's the new chairman of the Minnesota Republican Party. And we're talking about kind of the state of the Republican Party. Obviously, you're used to rough and tumble politics. You served in the state Senate. You served in leadership there. But the last few years, kind of during the Trump presidency, not just because of Trump, but certainly his personality, his style, seemed to polarize the country, polarize the state. Any sense of how the party looks going ahead? Is it wait and see what he does for, 2024? Or is the party still kind of at its core conservatives and what it was before Trump in Minnesota?
The party is still conservative. I think the Republican Party has a long history. We have some core principles that have not changed and will not change. At this point, Donald Trump is a former president, certainly deserves respect as a former president, but he's a private citizen. He's not a candidate. There are a lot of people who I think became interested in Republican Party politics as a result of Donald Trump. We certainly recognize that. He certainly has some influence, particularly in certain parts of the state, that have brought new interest and new enthusiasm to our party. And we obviously want to keep that enthusiasm and interest. But this is not the party of Trump. It is the Republican Party. And Donald Trump was our president for 4 years and was a candidate before that. And as far as the next cycle, we'll see what happens. But there's still a lot of interest among people in the party for Donald Trump, but it's not become a party that is focused on him. It's more focused on the ideas of the party and how we can communicate those to people across the state. I believe that this party is important. It's important to the citizens of the state. The ideas that we have are important. And a part of our job is to make sure that those ideas get communicated widely so that people can contrast what we believe is the kind of government we need versus the kind of government that the progressive Democrats are offering. And that's an important debate to have. And we're going to do everything we can to make sure that debate happens.
When it comes to those issues, one of the topics that came up last weekend at the convention continues to kind of linger is election security or election integrity. Where do you stand on that? What's the view of where Minnesota is? Do you trust Minnesota elections? Are there reforms that you want the party or your elected officials to pursue on elections?
Well, as you know, I served in the Senate for 14 years, and there were a lot of election bills that came down the road when I was there, and many of them I voted against that later became law. So there are ongoing discussions about what is the best structure for our elections, and I think there is some, and then that's going to continue. That's the job of the legislature is to write those laws, and then we live by them. But it does concern me, and I think it should concern everybody, Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. When you have, as the Star Tribune reported a couple of weeks ago, a significant part of the population, 45% or whatever it was, who have some mistrust or lack of confidence in the process, that's a concern. If I'm a Democrat and we win elections and we won an election, but we know that almost half the voters don't trust those elections, I would be worried about that. And so I think that this is an issue that everybody should be concerned about. I don't see it as a partisan issue. I think it is, how do we restore the confidence of the voters in Minnesota that elections are being conducted fairly, that appropriate levels of security measures are being taken, that people can trust that when they vote, their vote is counted and counted fairly and accurately. Those are all legitimate questions. And I think all of us have an interest to make sure that we we have that kind of a system. So I think that certainly in the legislative arena, there will likely be efforts to modify some of those laws to try to make them, at least to the views of some legislators, more transparent or more amenable to the security and transparency of the process. So we'll see where that goes. But as a party, I don't think there's any debate about whether Joe Biden, President Biden, won Minnesota. I don't think that's a controversy. And I don't think there's going to be any candidates that are going to be making an issue of, well, we need to, you know, relitigate the last election. I don't think that is in the cards. I do think there is generally a concern. We want to make sure the process is right and fair. Part of that is, frankly, making sure we have poll watchers and election judges and observers at the canvas of the votes and those kinds of things that are very process-oriented, but they help reassure people that this is being conducted in the way it needs to be conducted. And that's important work, and I would just say it's important for everybody, Republicans and Democrats.
One of the reasons, you know, my sense and is that, especially in Minnesota, I don't want to talk about other states just because there's a lot of debate in other states, but even in Minnesota, you know, you served in the legislature, there's rarely been questions, but this national narrative began to form from President Trump, from others, that maybe those 45% in Minnesota that don't trust elections are picking up on that, whether it's misinformation, whether it's confusion over another state. Do you feel confident that Minnesota elections are safe and secure right now?
Well, that's, I don't have inside information on the election system, so I don't know that I can point to any problems. I know there have been questions asked about some of the procedures that were implemented, partly because of the pandemic.
Right.
And there were concerns, I think, in some cases about last minute changes in the process that there were objections to. I think there were some lawsuits filed. I think things of that nature did not help make people feel confident that the process was conducted the right way. I think we recognize the authority of the legislature to write laws, but when those written laws get kind of changed at the last minute by courts and others, those things are never ideal, in my opinion. So I do believe there were things in the last election cycle that did raise a lot of questions. And I believe that some of those things are going to try to be addressed in the legislature, which is the appropriate place for that to happen in the next sessions going after, you know, coming up here. So, but again, generally, I think Minnesota has a reputation. I think it's well earned. And we just want to make sure that if there are concerns, if people are unsure, we want to do everything we can to reassure people. And part of that is just making the process transparent. People have to know how it works. And we're interested in answering any questions we can along that score.
One of the things that I thought about as you were running and successful in being Republican Party chair is that when you were in the Senate, you represented Eden Prairie and southwestern suburbs, a suburban district, and you lost your Senate seat in 2016. Republicans have kind of lost some ground in the suburbs over the last few years. Do you have a sense of why? Do you have some ideas on issues or topics that you think Republicans can, you know, campaign on that are different or will help in some of those suburban areas? Because, as you know, that's the battleground in most statewide elections.
Well, yeah, of course, the candidates are the ones that really define the issues that they want to campaign on. But so I'm not right. trying to, you know, dictate to any potential candidate what issues they should, you know, try to focus on. But I do believe, for example, that there is a great deal of concern about education. And I've got kids who are kind of that millennial age, and their friends and their young parents now, and great levels of frustration about what they saw happen in the last year or two with the pandemic and how that was handled and just how the whole traditional school system has functioned. And I think there's great dissatisfaction with that. I think that is an issue that Republicans have for quite a while. And I certainly, when I was in the legislature, I carried bills to try to bring about some changes to that structure to try to make the system be more friendly, if you will, to what families want to see for their kids. And I think that the education issues and how we've seen things transpire in the last year or two are going to be important for not just for suburban voters, but certainly for suburban. They're like every other parent. They want the best for their kids. And when they see these results of deterioration of progress in basic learning skills, that's a concern. When their kids are not able to attend classes for a variety of reasons, when I think there's just a lot of concern about this structure that we have. And given the technology and given all the other things that we have today, do we have to have that technology of the 19th century continue going into the future? And I think that that's an issue that's going to be important.
I do think education is one of the issues that, you know, we talked about suburban areas, but parents, younger generation, or even people who have been big supporters of the education system. But I do sense there has been a lot of change. Obviously, the pandemic is not a partisan thing. It wasn't a partisan issue, and the governor had to deal with it in the way he did. Are there other things related, unrelated to the pandemic? I'll raise one that conservatives, you know, in Minnesota have raised concern about curriculum, whether it's on, you know, the history of race relations in this country or kind of social issues in the classroom. Do you hear much about that? Do you think those are the kinds of things parents are upset about? Or is it more about, you know, kind of how the pandemic was dealt with and frankly, some, you know, inconsistencies from district to district or community to community and how they, you know, address the pandemic?
Well, I think it's both. I've heard a lot about the change in direction, if you will, or the modification direction of some of the curriculum. And I got into politics out of concern for my own kids' education when they were young and frustration at that time over many curriculum matters. That was back in the profile of learning, if anyone can remember that, and Governor Ventura's education commissioner and the focus on that particular reform, and raised a lot of concerns. Outcome-based education, I think, was the phrase. Yeah. So I think that it's not unheard of to have parents start to feel as if the direction of the curriculum maybe isn't consistent with their own understanding of what it should be. And I'll tell you what really, when I was got involved, it was I felt that I bring concerns to my local school district and felt that they were very dismissive of anything that I might suggest. So I think that's part of it. That dynamic where as a parent, you have a concern about a certain thing and you bring that up and the response is, go away, we're the experts, we know what we're doing. You just get your kids on the bus on time and make sure they get their homework done. And I'm being a little unkind. That's not
understood. No,
it's sort of that sense that, well, we're the parents. We care about our kids. We want them to be well-educated. We don't want the school to be doing things in conflict with our own sense of values. And so I think that those kinds of issues have been around. They'll continue to be around. So, yes, I believe curriculum issues are a part of the frustration and how they've been handled, as well as some of the dynamics of just how the schools operate, given the pandemic constraints.
David Hand's been our guest here on Sunday Take. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll be back next week, 9 o'clock on News Talk 830 WCCO.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.